New lawmakers, a new governor, 100 years, and massive citizen engagement. From SDPB, today is Wednesday, March 12th. This is In the Moment State House. Coming up this hour, we check in with the Lieutenant Governor, our Dakota political junkies, and SDPB reporters. Here are a few highlights. Lieutenant Governor Van Huysen joins us to discuss how strong fiscal management and a willingness to listen to voters have influenced this legislative session. We'll hear his thoughts later in the hour. Dakota political junkies John Hunter and Michael Carr discuss the impact of single-issue campaigns and the ongoing battle over direct democracy in the state. Plus, Lee Strubinger has an update on SDPB funding and the work of the week in Pierre. Strubinger and CJ Keene are coming at you after the news. We're broadcasting today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. For today's In the Moment State House, we're going to kick things off with our politics and public policy reporter, Lee Strubinger. We are connecting with him from SDN Communications Studio in the Capitol Building in Pierre. Lee, thanks for stopping down.
Thanks for having me, Lori.
All right. So we're saying a lot during this hour that the session is wrapping up and that some of the big, you know, deadlines are over, but still there is a lot going on this week in the legislative session. Help people understand exactly what's happening at this stage of the process.
Yeah. So in the beginning of the week, it was really like a day that was kind of reserved for both the House and Senate to kind of finally button up the remaining bills that hadn't been necessarily fully weighed in on at this particular point. So it was either vote these bills down, reject them, or vote them up and send them to the governor's desk. Mm. There are some occasional things that do happen if chambers kind of disagree on certain amendments that another chamber might have put on another bill. And that's what some of the rest of the days out here are kind of reserved for, is to kind of work through those differences.
Okay. And then considering the veto process, I asked Lieutenant Governor Tony Van Huysen if there were any vetoes on the horizon. He said those decisions have not been made yet. Are you hearing anything about bills that might face the veto?
I am not of yet, but there are certainly maybe a couple that I am sort of watching closely to see maybe how the governor weighs in on those bills that reach his desk. I mean, obviously one of them was, how is he going to weigh in on the eminent domain ban for carbon pipelines? He kind of signed that sort of right away last week, the week that it reached his desk. But there are some other newer ideas that maybe haven't gotten as far that have kind of reached his desk. One of the ones I'm thinking of in particular is a bill, I believe it's Senate Bill 83, but it would basically reform the state's ingestion law. Okay. Currently, it's a Class 6 felony if you ingest a controlled substance. This would bump it down to a misdemeanor for your first two offenses, while sort of ordering you to get evaluated for treatment and kind of send you in that direction initially. Before maybe spending a few weeks or months in prison for that felony level charge. So it'll be interesting to see how he weighs in on that.
Note to listeners, as always, depending on when you're listening to our conversation, go to sdpb.org for the latest updates and all the news stories. Lee, also, this is the time of year where we start thinking about summer studies and what will rise to the top. Any thoughts on where that might be headed?
The two ones that I'm watching in particular are one that was announced last week or a couple weeks ago. What is time? basically the governor looking for a path forward on doing something about this proposed men's prison. He's kind of convened a task force of lawmakers, the attorney general's office, his office, other interested groups to come together and come up with some ideas to get some kind of project moving forward. Lawmakers in the past few years have set aside hundreds of millions of dollars to build something. A little bit of sticker shock about the proposal that ended up moving forward and some concern about its location. So I'll be interested to see what this task force comes up with in the next four meetings that it has, because they want to convene in July to take an up or down vote on something. Yeah. So that's all kind of in the works. I think some lawmakers actually were meeting earlier this morning for some initial steps. Kind of heard that in the hallways. Yeah. Another thing I'm watching out for is another interim study to look at the kind of property tax issue here in the state. Some mm-hmm. people are saying it's too high, and various lawmakers really want to take another deep dive into what is driving property taxes to go up so much. Some say it's the spending, and so we'll kind of see what it is that they ultimately look at and come up with.
Okay, we'll have more on that prison conversation with Lieutenant Governor Van Huysen later in the hour, and really why he thinks that that is one of the success stories of this legislative session. Lee, tell me a little bit about Tuesday morning's Appropriation Committee meeting, because this is an update on SDPB's funding, which you've been following as well throughout the session.
So, I mean, basically what was going on Tuesday morning is state appropriators were moving fairly quickly in terms of just setting what are called motion sheets, which is basically they're kind of fitting the pieces of the state budget together within the kind of framework that they have to work within. And so they were just setting those for various different agencies. And there was kind of a sort of unique kind of approach to what was the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications motion sheet, because the recommendation was to reduce SDPB's funding by $3.6 million that I'm sure our listeners have heard a lot about already. And basically there was kind of like a alternative sort of line item in there to restore that funding, and it made it into the motion sheet. And typically I expect the budget to be the last thing that, I mean, the budget will obviously probably be the last thing that gets voted on. It's hard to say what day that will generally get voted on, but if they have time to be here and talk things over, it'll probably get voted on Thursday. So that will kind of be the, once it gets signed, and that'll be kind of the final disposition on that before they send it to the governor to also sign it or potentially reject it. But
yeah,
I don't think people have really seen a governor not sign a general bill. So
yeah. All right. So what else are you looking for? Or are there things that you, when you, you know, put this session into perspective overall, are there things that stood out for you? And maybe it's a little too soon for you to put it in perspective overall, because you're still very much in the thick of it. But either that, or is there something else that you're following this week that you want to bring listeners alert to?
I will say that it feels like this session overall has been really a push towards a flex by this new kind of legislative majority to bring more of the legislature into the role of state government. This is a very part-time citizen-led state legislature. And it's kind of been a response in some ways to the Governor Kristi Noem era. Not only we're kind of learning right now about some of her uses of the state credit card that we're seeing other media outlets report on, but also some leases that the administration entered into, or this kind of even goes back to the response to the men's prison and sort of the consternation about that particular project. I think that has been sort of this session in a nutshell. And what we're seeing is Governor Larry Roden, I think he's using the word reset a lot to really kind of establish like, hey, I think during the inauguration weekend, there's a new sheriff in town. That was kind of the phrase there. But basically to say he's willing to work with the state legislature on these issues and with their concerns and kind of going forward. So, I mean, you've got a new administration and a new kind of Republican majority running the legislature right now. So there's also just a lot of newness that kind of has come along with that and priorities with that newness.
Yeah. And we're learning what that word reset means in a number of different ways. Lee Strubinger, thank you so much for the update today. We'll let you get back to it.
Thanks, Lori.
Joining us next, also from the Capitol building, CJ King with SDPB. Hey, CJ, welcome back.
Hey, Lori. Happy to be here.
A couple of things you've been following, and it begins with librarians. Tell us if you haven't been paying attention to this piece of legislation. Catch us up, please.
Yeah, it's absolutely been a, let's say, interesting session for librarians, beginning first with, of course, the proposed cuts to the state library and HB 1239, which could see librarians face obscenity charges if, you know, the wrong content is put into the hands of minors. Now, what exactly that content is isn't totally clearly defined, but it's generally perceived as something that would be seen as, quote, harmful. What harmful means, that's part of the question. That seems like a definition in the eye of the beholder.
All right. Seems to me that this bill got kind of switched and amended somehow to go forward. What do we know? What's the latest?
Yeah, so the bill that just recently passed the Senate floor this week was ultimately declawed, and declawed in a pretty significant way, where it would move many of these proceedings out of the criminal court and into the civil court. So big picture, librarians wouldn't have to worry about potential jail time for the wrong material getting into the hands of children. Now, this is seen as an unfriendly amendment to the proponents of the bill.
Sure.
But opponents say that it's something of it was a motion that made the whole concept just a little bit easier to swallow.
All right. So librarians and libraries already have to have procedures and policies in place on how to deal with books that are challenged, for example. So at the end of the day, when all this settles out, and again, for listeners, you can always check the latest at sdpb.org. But going forward, has anything really changed?
So I think what's really changed is, you know, the procedure here. But you make a very good point that there's already processes in place in libraries. The Miller test, if you ever want to Google that, that's a pretty well-accepted standard as to what is or isn't seen as obscene content. And at, you know, your local library in Brookings, Yankton, Winter, I don't know, there's certainly processes in place if you have questions about that, the content of some of those books. And that was seen really in a lot of the opponents' testimony.
Yeah. So if you have questions, go to your school librarian, go to your local librarian, ask them about those policies and procedures, what's already in place, and have a conversation there in your hometown, and I think you'll learn a lot. Let's talk a little bit about Ellsworth Air Force Base. CJ, another story you've been covering. What's new?
So if you live in Rapid City, it's pretty hard to ignore. There are big changes happening at Ellsworth Air Force Base as they get ready for the next generation stealth bomber, the B-21. That is a huge investment for both the Air Force Base and the state. And much of that support that the state wants to see is being pushed by Rapid City lawmakers. One bill was brought by Rapid City Republican Senator Helene Duhamel that would create some funds to help support, you know, some of the adverse effects of the B-21. You know, think schools being expanded, roads that are getting chewed up by heavy machinery, upgrading water and sewer lines in Box Elder to accommodate actual thousands of more airmen and their families coming to, pardon the pun, but land in western South Dakota.
Yeah, so the expense of it, the economic growth of it, the speed with which everything is happening, is that what you're getting at?
Absolutely. And we're not the first state to pass legislation like this to support Air Force installation. One quote that I have here from Duhamel right in front of me is, if a business came and dangled 1,600 jobs and $2 billion of construction, it would probably be the state would probably be very incentivized to help them in any way that they can. And Duhamel asks, what's the difference about a Air Force installation?
Yeah. And I'm sure the opponents would say, well, this is the federal government, not a business that we're trying to incentivize. Plus, Ellsworth has been in the crosshairs for some readiness issues in the past. Have people been talking about that, about the situation at Ellsworth?
I think the big debate that we're seeing on the Senate floor isn't quite the readiness question, but selling Ellsworth to the whole state question, right?
Sure.
Like, and that especially was seen in SB 16, which would have created a excise tax to fund Ellsworth improvement projects specifically. You can imagine how, say, a Republican in Canton may not love that plan as much as, you know, putting aside a general fund. But really, that's been the big debate for Ellsworth across South Dakota is, how is this going to benefit, you know, Yankton or Brookings?
Sure. All right, CJ Keene, we can again find the latest on sdpb.org. Thanks for being here.
Happy to do it, Lori.
You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. We're coming to the close of the legislative session in South Dakota. Our Dakota political junkies look at the session in the rearview mirror. John Hunter is publisher emeritus of the Madison Daily Leader. He's a member of the South Dakota Newspaper Hall of Fame. Michael Card is a professor emeritus of political science at the University of South Dakota. We gathered in SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls, and we'll begin our conversation by looking back at the previous election and how a newsworthy primary season influenced the 100th legislative session.
The primary elections resulting in a fairly large number of incumbents being defeated. Also a fairly large increase in the spending by political action committees. Often legislators with their political action committees supporting other legislative candidates. And so we saw a number of incumbents defeated, 14 or thereabouts, and that brought in a whole new crop of legislators. We saw some legislators changing chambers, and so we see a fairly large number of brand new legislators who have changed chambers, going from the Senate to the House, the House to the Senate, and the highest number of women in the legislature in South Dakota's history. So we saw a lot of bills that were probably had been in front of the legislature previously, and that often happens when you have new legislators, especially since term limits. We saw just a large number of those types of bills. But it also was significant to me that a lot of these bills had been defeated before, and people bring a bill. In terms of the political science literature, we talk about trustees and delegates. Delegates are those who bring the wishes of their constituents, and trustees are those who, well, you elected me for my wisdom and probity, and I'll vote how I think I should as a trustee of your votes. Mm-hmm. And so we ended up with a lot of new bills that were probably culture war bills. We saw a lot of bills that have been defeated before get defeated again. But I think we'll be talking about those. But I think that was the beginning at the time of the election that things are different.
Yeah.
We also have less money available.
Right.
And the budget is the primary policy document of the state. And that budget was put forth by a lame duck governor who was heading off to other events, especially as we've seen in reporting by the Dakota Scout. Lots of increased travel and not necessarily being around. And a lot of these bills, these budgetary changes, involved legislative changes. So instead of just being in the budget document, where most proposals in the budget address end up being, but all of a sudden now there are legislative bills that go to a committees of jurisdiction and then go to appropriations. So many of them died.
Yeah. All right. John Hunter, you're watching this and seeing what kind of bills, and the single issue primaries, yet they have to be there for the whole session, essentially. They're not, you don't vote and send somebody to peer just to vote on one thing, because they're there the whole time.
Yeah,
among
those 14 incumbents, who Republican incumbents who lost in the primary last June, a number of them were supporters of Senate Bill 201, which was the Landowner Bill of Rights. And again, if we want to refresh the idea of that, it was an idea that, look, let's put in place protections in case we have a pipeline, distances and safety and bonds and so forth. Some voters interpreted that as, oh, that just means you really want the pipeline. You're setting up rules so that you're a supporter of the pipeline. And so they said, okay, we want you out. So I don't know how many of those 14. Of course, there's not every voter votes just on one issue. Mm-hmm. But among those 14, a fair number of them were supporters of 201. So if you think of this, 14, let's just make up some numbers for a second. Let's say we have three parties in South Dakota. You've got 10% Democrats. You've got 45% moderate Republicans and 45% far-right Republicans, just for sake of argument. Mm-hmm. If you switch 14 moderates to farther right, that's more than a 10% swing. So it would be, it would take you from 45-45 to 55-35 or some number to that. It's a big swing.
Yeah.
And so when you have that biggest swing combined with the term limits and so forth, and you have a 40% of the legislature is new, you have a lot of issues that pop up, Mike indicated before, that have been defeated before, that brought up, but also brought up that have never been seen before or thought of before. And I, one observation, Lori, I think is that I think there were some wilder ideas in every session, but a lot of them would be taken out before they were ever introduced.
Yeah,
you'd be sitting next to a veteran legislator, and that person would say, "No, no, no, that's not a good idea, and here's why." Because 4 years ago, this, you know, it never gets introduced. It did seem like some of those bills were introduced this year. Went to the LRC, got it drafted, introduced. You know, got some co-signers, and kind of surprised most observers. Now, maybe they were defeated quickly in committee. Some were withdrawn by the sponsor once they realized how crazy it was themselves. But it just seems as though with that high turnover, with the new legislators, and those bills were outside the pipeline argument. So
right,
a person
right,
may have been elected or defeated based on the pipeline, but there's 500 bills that they had to vote on or introduced. It could be in a completely unrelated area, and I think it was. So I think this session had more bills that were introduced that I don't think would have been introduced in years past.
Yeah, some interesting. Yeah,
I want to throw one thing on that, and that is you also had new leadership in both chambers that reflected that split to some degree or another.
Yeah.
And what happened was they chose, you know, the Speaker of the House and the President Pro Tem of the Senate decide who's on what committee and who the committee chairs are. Mm-hmm. And so we saw a lot more bills get out of committee that I thought would have been killed in committee, some of which were tabled, which the significance of tabling versus sending the bill to a day that doesn't exist, move to send to the 41st day. Tabling is non-debatable. Sending to the 41st day is debatable.
Okay. Mm.
And so a lot of bills came out of committee, and they came out on close votes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. And those leadership votes were close votes, too. So
agreed.
Yeah, we saw the impact of all of that in a year when there was a whole lot to be decided and not a lot of money to decide it with. Some things that stand out, I think, will always be the Huron School District defunding legislation that was defeated.
Withdrawn, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it was.
But that's an example to your point, John. Remind people who weren't paying attention to that what happened is one of those things that you'd think that maybe would not have been brought forth.
Right. It was just a one sentence bill that just said the state shall not send any state aid to education to the Huron School District. Which just seems there was no explanation. There was no unless they do something else. And it just, I don't think that ever would have been. Now, it was withdrawn by the sponsor, I believe. I'm confident it did not go to a committee vote or even get presented. But I think those would not have been introduced in years past.
Yeah.
And in some senses, you wonder about the reputation of the sponsor. If they introduce those kinds of things and withdraw it right away, it's like, you're not being very thoughtful here. But these are laws of South Dakota that you're introducing.
Yeah.
This is not like I'm throwing this out at some local club.
We're going to hear from Lieutenant Governor Van Huysen here later on in the hour, but he talked about the importance of citizen engagement this year. So I want to talk with you before we hear him say, like, yeah, that really worked. Certainly with SDPB, we saw the just outpouring of support from SDPB listeners when they thought, you know, when Governor Kristi Noem said these budget cuts should go through, people asking for that funding to be fully restored. That funding has been fully restored, largely because of that kind of engagement and support. But John, you had some ideas about what kind of engagement with your legislators works and what kind doesn't. Because as Lieutenant Governor Van Huysen will point out, we have a state legislature where people get on the bus and show up in Pierre and stand in the rotunda and are heard.
I'm very proud of South Dakota's process in that, by and large, our legislators are accessible to us. Given the part-time nature of the job, they tend to live, I mean, they have to live in the community that they represent.
Mm-hmm.
But they're people that we know and see and so forth. So, and then, yes, haul buses out to Pierre. It's Sioux Falls Day. It's Madison Day. It's Higher Education Day, it's SDPB Day, whatever those things are. And we go out and we talk to our legislators, Newspaper Day, and you have lunch or you have donuts or something like this. And you, so it's very, I love the process, the fact that we can do this. Now, given that, there are different effectiveness levels of different types of lobbying. Now, remember, there's professional lobbyists, and they have to have a badge, and they represent certain organizations and so mm-hmm. forth. But most of what you're talking about, the citizen engagement, or Lieutenant Governor Van Huysen will talk about, is really those of us who don't hold a badge and just know our legislators and invite them to coffee before, during the session, and just say, let's talk about this. So I've always thought the most effective is going to be person to person, Cracker Barrel, or it's going to be in the campaign when they're on the parade route and they're shaking hands or whatever. The person to person, face to face, I think is the most effective. The second one is going to be a phone call. It's going to be a personal phone call. It's my voice, it's your voice. We know each other. We can go back and forth. We can do that. I think that's almost as effective. Then it might be an email, and that's certainly very popular today. Imagine how many emails a legislator gets, right, is poured in. But if he gets a form letter that, dear legislator, it's going to be less effective than a dear Fred or whatever my friend is named. In fact, a lot of these relationships, it's more effective if you know the person in advance. If you're introducing yourself for the first time right when your issue hits, you'll be less effective than if you've known this person a long time.
Right,
And then you can see it going down. If you get social media rants or something like that, I say it's not only ineffective, it might be anti-effective.
Counterproductive.
Counterproductive. Thing. That's a better word. You've got better words.
It was his. I just repeated what he said, yes.
Like John Belushi, 10 years of college wasted.
Remember, I'm the one that doesn't have any probity.
I remember when I first bought a house, and that was the first time I realized that some of these people come to your door and knock and want to talk to you. It used to freak me out, and I did not want to talk to anybody because, oh, who is this person at my door? It took me a couple years to where I was like, wait a minute, this person is coming to your door. You should talk to them, where we got to the point where we're like, here, sit down on the, you know, we do want to get to know you. We do have some thoughts for you. I will say they don't come to my door nearly as much as they used to back in the early days. So campaigning is a little bit different than it was 20 years ago when we bought a house. But
think of all those parades. I mean, I've seen small town parades. And they walk around. Frankly, they want to shake and talk as well. They don't want to just throw candy for a mile and then leave, right?
It's awkward.
So, there's a process for effectiveness. And in the case of this session, this year's citizen engagement, I just thought people chose to make their voice heard in whatever form. And it was crystal clear. And the state library and all its tentacles that go out to local libraries, I think, hit a real sensitive chord for a lot of people. And they contacted their legislators in whatever form.
From the funding to how librarians are treated.
Absolutely.
People had something to say about that. I want to expand on that with you, Mike Card, because also another way that people are, you know, we talked about primaries, we talk about just getting to know your legislator, and then in South Dakota we have this initiative and referendum process, and the war on that process continues. Tell us a little bit about what you've been following about how we handle this in the state.
Well, South Dakota was the first state in the nation to have both the initiative and the referendum. The initiative is there ought to be a law. The referendum is there ought not to be a law. And they require 5% of the signatures of the people who voted for governor in the state in order to have those issues be put in front of the voters to have them either be a law or to repeal a law that the legislature has passed. What I have noticed over the years is, starting with the abortion votes in 2006, there seems to be more and more limits on initiative activity. Some of these are cast forward as being to make sure that we have actual registered voters, that we have South Dakotans. But almost all of the activities put on add cost to those. So it's very difficult, although not impossible, as we saw with Referred Law 21, to have a group of committed people say there ought, in this case, ought not to be a law, because that raises people's emotions is we got to get rid of this thing. It's easier for that than it is to get an initiative passed. So you end up having to hire people to spread petitions around to get signatures. And then we see all sorts of procedural issues being brought up over the years. And since 2018, Ballotpedia, an organization that is pretty nonpartisan as it goes, they just describe, and they have found that there were 10 bills that have passed in South Dakota that added to the cost, either in terms of making signature gathering more difficult, making individuals report who they are, have name and address so that people are less likely to actually want to pass around a petition, and on. The significant part of that is it's more than twice the number of bills that have been introduced and passed than other states who have the initiative and referendum. So we saw even this year there were certainly six that have passed by my count. I may have missed one or two that would make signature gathering more difficult, added constraints. And in South Dakota, it's we have had more from 2018 to 2024 than the next five states put together.
Wow.
And that and this year we blew through that. And wow. You know, for the most part, people don't pay attention to initiative and referendum until they get on the ballot. But a lot of these are cast as ways of making our elections more secure, but they add to the cost, which then we complain about the cost. We don't want things that are in the Constitution that should be statute, and yet we see our legislature doing the same thing. You know, and some of them are rather benign. The legislative proposed amendment to create a trust fund for the unclaimed property.
Right.
Well, that really should be in statute by that same set of reasoning, but yet many legislators will complain that we put things in the Constitution that really should be statutory. This has been going on since before statehood, in the 1883 convention, 1885 convention, 1889 constitutional
convention. You weren't at any of those conventions, were you?
No, but I've read the debates. You know, and so our last territorial governor, first governor of South Dakota, wanted more stuff in the Constitution. And he pounded his fist on the table. We shouldn't be dealing with these bills over and over and over again. Put it in there once, and then we won't have to do the repeal. So I guess for me it's rather exciting because we've had the initiative and referendum in the United States longer than we didn't have the initiative and referendum in our country.
Yeah.
So to say that we're a republic is, well, yeah, we're a democratic republic.
Yeah.
We both elect our representatives, which makes us democratic, and we have direct democracy.
Yeah.
And go to a township meeting, we certainly have even more direct forms of democracy in some places. I get a little heated about this one. And partly because these are all passing through the legislature. Well,
yeah.
Often what we get an initiated measure is when the legislature hasn't acted. And my favorite line out of the constitutional debates is, it's the gun behind the door. Now, that wasn't actually in the debates. It was actually in the Madison Leader at the time, an editorial that said, we need this because we need the gun behind the door, either if the legislature doesn't act as we want them to, as the people want them to, or because there ought not to be this law.
John Hunter and Michael Carr joining for analysis of the 100th legislative session. Now, you can find this Dakota Political Junkies conversation and the extended conversation on our podcast, SDPB's Dakota Political Junkies. Search for it wherever you find your podcasts. It's on all the platforms. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. State legislators have wrapped the bulk of their work for South Dakota's 100th legislative session. Veto day, still on the horizon. Lieutenant Governor Tony Venhuizen stopped by SDPB's SDN Communications Studio in the Capitol Building for an update.
I'm looking forward to this process. We had a great organizational conversation with the legislators who will be serving on there to get our schedule set and kind of talk through how we want to structure these meetings. We'll be meeting four times, the first in Sioux Falls, and then we'll be meeting in a few other sites around the state. But this was really, you know, this prison issue has been with us now for 4 or 5 years. We have a state penitentiary that's more than 140 years old, and I think widely believed to be at the end of its useful life, and something needs to be done. Now, a lot of good work over the last 4 years has been done by former legislators, by members of the administration, to put together a plan. Unfortunately, and I think in large part because there's been so much turnover in the legislature, this year there was not the two-thirds support you would need to authorize the construction based on that plan. And we have a lot of legislators who are new and who are entering this conversation now and have not had the benefit of the last 4 years of work. So this task force will be an opportunity, and I was honored to be asked to chair it. This will be an opportunity for members of the current legislature, who I think are a pretty representative group of the Senate and the House, as well as some other officials who have an interest in this issue, to take a fresh look at the whole thing. What are our needs? What are our assets? What can we do? You know, the good news is Governor Noem and now Governor Roden and the legislature have very wisely set aside a lot of money that is there in an account that can be used to address these issues. What's the best way to deploy those? We have this site in Lincoln County where we've already bought the land. Is that the right site? Is this the right design or not? These are the questions we'll be talking about over the next few months.
Yeah, and that's something you say you look forward to, because why? What's to look forward to of it versus, you know, saying, hey, I'm happy that we put that one in the bag before we left?
Well, I've just been very excited about it, because I think we took something that was a real source of tension and controversy and have turned the page now into a more positive conversation about looking forward.
Yeah.
And again, that's not a criticism of the plan that was presented, which I know a lot of work went into and I think was probably a pretty good plan. But we need to have the support and the buy-in from the legislature and from the state for what we do.
How about property taxes? You and I talked about this before you were named as Lieutenant Governor. It was something you came into the session with it high on your list. And where are we at today or this week?
Well, it's been an interesting week. There's always an issue that kind of hangs out until the end and then really gets settled. And as we record this interview, we saw on Monday several of the property tax bills were defeated. The one bill that moved forward, although with an amendment, was the bill that Governor Roden had proposed after convening a group of 10 or 12 legislators to provide input. Again, a pretty wide range of legislators to provide input, and all of whom endorsed that plan. And so we're hoping that that is an opportunity to move forward to, as the governor would say, maybe push pause and stop the bleeding on the increases in homeowner assessments that have driven a lot of the increase in property tax on homeowners, particularly in the Black Hills and in the Sioux Falls area. I do think it sounds like the legislature is probably also going to have a summer study, maybe to look at some larger changes. You know, the challenge with property tax is it takes a lot of money to move the needle. We collect $1.6 billion a year in property tax. None of that money goes to the state. It all goes to local governments. And if you want to have a noticeable impact on property tax, you either have to raise another tax and put the money in, or shift between the different classes or different types of property, or cut spending at the local level, or grow the economy and grow the number of people paying the tax. Of course, I prefer the last is the best option, but it takes time to do that.
When you first came in, part of your proposal was to deal with the sales tax and to raise that, or, you know, not to sunset the cut. Is that part of this plan, or where is that at going forward?
That is not part of anything that will be passing this year.
Okay.
You know, I expect that the legislative committee will be looking at all options, and there's a pretty wide range of opinion on that. Everything from, you know, cities, counties, and schools need to cut spending so we can cut property tax to, you know, then there are people who feel that those units of government are underfunded. Mm-hmm. And that this is really a revenue issue, not an expense issue. So the opinion on that really runs the gamut. What's caused the immediate problem is just the very fast growth in homeowner assessments, particularly in a couple areas of the state.
Yeah.
And so we're hoping that the governor's bill can help stop that problem and allow us to take a deeper look at the system.
Let's talk about growing the economy, because we had a conversation on Monday on In the Moment with some macroeconomists from SDSU. I'm not sure if you heard that or not, but they were talking about the impact of tariffs and uncertainty and what that can do to economic growth, what the tariffs in against China with the soybean markets, a lot of those markets have not come back from the first Trump administration. So from a macroeconomic standpoint, from an international trade standpoint, they had some concerns. I'm wondering how you would weigh in on the economic growth for the state of South Dakota in the current, you know, political climate.
Well, we've had a lot of economic growth over the last several years. South Dakota's economy has been very good. We definitely have seen, and you know, these things are cyclical. We've definitely seen that slowing down from a state perspective on the revenue side.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what led to the tough budget year that we had this year. And I expect that next year will be a pretty tough budget year too. These things are cyclical, and we had a lot of growth, and now we're going to have a couple years that I think are pretty flat. And, you know, uncertainty always is a factor that weighs against the economy. I do think that when it comes to the tariffs, I mean, we've already seen the president announce these tariffs and then back off on them, and I always remember this guy his background is in real estate, and so sometimes he's staking out a negotiating position for some other. You know, he's trying to get them to deal with fentanyl or deal with immigration or something. And I think it's always wise to remember that these things are negotiations.
All right. Let's talk about just economic growth with, you know, our ability to build things. We've had conversations about pipelines, conversations about the prison. Will Mortensen was on the show last week, and one of his concerns was, you know, are we becoming a place where we're afraid to build big things. We can't think big. What do you think that the big opportunities for growth and industry are in the state? Where do you see us growing in the future?
Oh, I see a lot of opportunity for growth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know the governor is very excited about value-added ag, and that is an obvious place where South Dakota can continue to grow. And we see, you know, there have been in the last 10, 15 years, there's been a lot of development of rail, and we've seen development of big soybean processing facilities and more, certainly a lot of growth in the dairy sector, the cheese sector, or, you know, dairy production. There's a lot of room for growth in value-added ag, and I think there will continue to be. Beyond that, you know, in Sioux Falls, we see big projects in the warehouse logistics sector. Certainly financial services continues to be a big area. Cybersecurity, that was something that Governor Noem really emphasized and the state continues to emphasize that it'll be a big growth area. So I'm very optimistic. I think this carbon pipeline issue has been a difficult and emotional issue, but I think people make a mistake if they try to apply it to everything else. I mean, it's interesting.
Sure.
The bills that have been brought this year, some which passed and some which failed, only apply to the carbon pipeline. You know, when you talk about use of eminent domain, nobody seems to object to eminent domain if it's an oil pipeline or a water pipeline. I think part of the issue with the carbon pipeline is that people see it as not a real thing. It's something that's driven by federal tax credits and federal regulatory requirements, as opposed to water or oil or something that is an actual product that people want to buy and that adds value. So it's an unusual debate.
As we come to the final days of this legislative session, are there other big successes or things that you will take away that you think it's the 100th session? We've talked about that a lot. Items that you think are historic or quietly historic?
Well, we have talked a lot about the 100th session, and you get to this time of the year where you're at the end of session, and it's always an interesting cycle. You get to peer. Everyone's excited to see each other. It's a little bit like a reunion. There's new people to meet. This year there were a lot of new people to meet. Then you get a little further into it, and people start to get tired of each other, and they start to get mad at each other, and you're maybe about ready to be gone. Then you get to this last week, and now the chips are pretty well fallen where they're going to fall. And now everyone's kind of getting along again, and they're happy, and now we're all going to miss each other. That's always the cycle we go through. I've seen it many times. But in terms of particular successes, of course, we balanced the budget, and that wasn't easy this year. Mm-hmm. I think we've dealt in a smart way with the property tax issue. I think we've dealt in a smart way with the prison issue, trying to move that ball forward. You know, another one that I would highlight is just in terms of keeping South Dakota as a good fiscally managed state, we're setting up a new trust fund for unclaimed property where in the past, as unclaimed property comes in, that would be treated as revenue and it would be spent. We always pay claims. We always have the money to pay claims if people claim it, but that money would be spent. Going forward, we're going to phase this in over several years, but those funds will be held in a trust fund so that they're available to pay out the claims, but rather than spending the cash, we'll just spend the interest. Yeah. And so this is another way that we are strengthening the foundation of our state, protecting us against future volatility, trying to stabilize our revenue sources, and I was very happy that we could get that done. Probably nothing that you can fit on a bumper sticker, but it's an important thing to do.
It feels like 10 years from now we're going to be talking about that, though. I mean, maybe 5 years from now we're going to be talking about that. I feel like that has the potential to have an impact in the future to me, instinctively.
Well, and the thing is, unclaimed property is so volatile.
Yeah.
We could be getting hundreds of millions a year that going into that trust fund, or it could fall off, and then we'll be glad we had it. But that's the idea, is to smooth out the volatility.
Any vetoes on the horizon that we know of?
Well, I'm the lieutenant governor. That's not up to me.
Okay. Fair. We'll let you get away with that.
There's a lot of bills that are just now coming downstairs, and so I think some of those decisions have yet to be made.
To be determined. All right. We heard this week as well, funding for South Dakota Public Broadcasting fully restored in the Appropriation Committee. Any thoughts on that process and what you heard from people across the state about the value of SDPB?
Yeah, well, and I would say more generally that this has always been true, but we really saw this year, one of the special things about South Dakota's legislature is that real people can get involved and can make a real impact. And we saw that on a number of issues this year. Certainly there was a lot of citizen engagement about some of the budget cuts. Public broadcasting was one of them. The state library cuts, which were largely restored, was certainly one of them. You know, there's some other issues. Of course, the carbon pipeline issue had a lot of citizen engagement. We just had a bill yesterday having to do with obscene material in libraries that again, a lot of citizen engagement. And on every one of those issues, that had a real impact. And there aren't a lot of states where you can just show up at the Capitol, testify in a committee hearing, find your legislator in the hall and talk to them, send them an email that they'll actually read. But in South Dakota, all those things are true, and it makes a real difference.
That's Lieutenant Governor Tony Van Huysen, and that is our show for today. We hope that it served you. Tomorrow on the program, we'll have more conversations about immigration in South Dakota. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for your support, and thank you for listening.